Blog Talk Radio.
The World Boxing Review Radio Show. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions now. Wow, what an honor. And live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, that takes us around the world with boxing news. Our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, man, what's going on, Bob?
Sounding good. All right. Yeah, we're going around the world today. We got a lot of good stuff. And, of course, you know, we're going to tell you what's going on today, Saturday, but the big fight tomorrow night, too, out in Malaysia with Manny Pacquiao getting back in the ring. We'll be talking about that, too. And a couple other bits of news, too, going on this week. WBO ordered Billy Joe Saunders now to fight his mandatory challenger, Demetrius Andrade, who's 25-0, 16 KOs, and he's a former WBO super welterweight champ. And also we see now Tyson Fury. He's linked up now to fight Francesco Pianetta on the 18th of August. That's going to be at Windsor Park in Belfast, Northern Ireland. And, you know, there we go back in that. And it looks like maybe Wilder might be fighting Brazil, too. That kind of was breaking yesterday, too, a little bit there, because obviously we're seeing nothing happening with the Joshua Wilder thing. So everybody's looking like they're moving on from there. So that's that.
Yeah, it keeps going back and forth. Wilder keeps saying, well, I'm fighting him and this and that. It's back and forth, left to right, back and forth. It's very confusing for the boxing fan, is because they can't prepare. You know, what hurts the promotion is when people don't have proper information of what's happening and when it's happening, so they can prepare, you know, to do such a thing to come on. You know what I mean? So, hey, look, it's one of those things, is that Wilder got to do something. He's fighting or he ain't fighting, or they got to get the proper information out. I know people with Anthony Joshua, is that they are committed to two dates that they said that they had in Wembley,
right.
Since Joshua is raised in London, and I think he would do very well like he did in the rest of the places in London. London's a very avid boxing capital in England.
I think he'd
do very well, and I think they said something like 100,000 seats, something like that, man. Wow. That's a lot of people,
yeah.
Bob. That's a lot of people,
right.
And you well.
A lot of people.
You
well,
yeah. Yeah, a lot. Hey, look, like we said last week with Julio Cesar Chavez when he fought Greg Hogan down in Azteca Stadium down in Mexico City, man, when you're down there by ringside and you look up, it looks like there's people floating in the sky and ants running around up there. But it's amazing that the atmosphere is electrifying, man. The stage was built up off the ground, and that's what they're probably going to have to do. I know I was in Wembley Stadium when I trained Tim Witherspoon when he fought Frank Bruno in Wembley. I think that was 40-some thousand people, and I mean, it was jam-packed in there. So 100-and-some thousand, I know it's going to be electrifying in there.
Yes, it is. That's a lot of people. You know, just from Pennsylvania here, we do have out there in the middle of the state our fine university, Penn State University, which actually holds like about 110,000. And when you're out there and you see 110,000 people in the stands, that's a lot of humanity. That's a city. You know what I mean? That's a lot of people.
Well, Bob, the information says Penn State, the Lions, on, you know, on Saturday when they're playing a home game, is that the football stadium becomes the third largest city in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, ain't that something?
Crowds, yeah. It's raining, yes, it is.
A crowd's a crowd. But, Tyson Fury, Bob, you know, he's getting matched up to fight him. To my understanding, in August at Windsor Park.
August 18th. Yeah,
yeah.
In Northern Ireland, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Francisco Pineda. He's a European Italian champion. You know, and I think his record somewhere is about 35-4-1 with 21 KOs, I think it is, something like that, his record. So, hey, look, Tyson Fury is our type of guy, man. He talks it, he walks it, you know. He talks it. If he can't get the big fight, he just keeps fighting. And Frank Warren, he was off for like 2 years after, you know, he had a sabbatical and his problems, you know. But it looks like Frank Warren says when they can't get the people they want in the ring, he just say he's going to keep his fighter busy. And when a fighter's busy, he sharpens his tools, he stays in shape, he stays in condition. And that's how you hit a home run, I think. And it keeps the interest in people. Now, if he can go out and do what he did in his last fight, he stopped a guy, I believe it was in the fourth round or something like that, Safara, his last fight. I think, man, oh, man, Tyson Fury, man, and Anthony Joshua, Wilder, one of them, in London, man, that, you're talking about, that's a big fight. They're big fights.
That's
so
a
we,
big
we
fight.
Got a lot
that
of those.
That would be a big one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And these guys are getting older. The guy that he's fighting now is about, I think, 33 years old. You know, he's up there with Wilder and them guys. So, you know, these guys are at the latter parts of their career. And, hey, look, when you can fight these big fights and get that kind of money, you know, you're still young in the eyes of living at 33, but in the eyes of sports and boxing, 33, 34, 35, you're just getting ready to go over top of the mountain. You know what I mean? There's not too many guys, you know, like George Foreman, who was an exception to the rule when it came to coming back and getting in that ring, because George Foreman was so strong, man, and can punch like a mule. So he had something that was kind of special that he was blessed with in order to get that off the ground. 45, 49, Bernard Hopkins, you know, another exception to the rules. But that don't happen for everybody. There are exceptions to the rule. But, Bob, what else do we got going on around the world?
I wanted to ask you something, too, from your perspective as a Hall of Fame trainer. We had our lead story last week. We were talking about the fight, Jose Carlos Ramirez versus Danny O'Connor, and then we found out of, you know, the whole thing that happened. O'Connor came in at 1.5 pounds overweight and then actually got hospitalized with dehydration, and the fight never went off, you know. And what did you take? There's a certain limit, I think, right? You know, where this is what Bob Arum, he came out and said some serious things about this whole situation, too. He was calling for these guys to get arrested and everything else, these trainers, you know. But there's that fine line where, like he said, that's as much as you're going to lose, you know. A pound and a half, you're never going to lose. And, you know, so he put this guy in jeopardy. Yeah, what's your take on something like that? Wouldn't you know where you're not going to make it?
Okay. Let me tell you what sports-specific training is. You know, by science that's studied the human body in sports training, is that at somewhere in training, your guy has to reach that weight, okay? And then his buddy, you go peaks and troughs in training, especially when you're working to get a guy at a specific weight. But once he reached that valley somewhere in training, then you start building him. And the weight will fluctuate. He'll go up. He'll come back down through the weight, depending on the routine routes that you have him training on. But once he hits that weight, and then the fast-twitch fiber, the slow-twitch fiber, the endurance, the hydration, all of that happens. So when he has to hit that weight again during weighing time for about, it's no problem. the body recovers because it's used to that because you hit it. You know, we have certain things clocked in our body. We're creatures of habit, of what we habitually do. So if you make that weight somewhere in training, when you go back down in that valley, your body, it's clocked in your body that you have done it before in training, so your body can recover from it, okay? And it won't tear into that fast twitch fiber, that slow twitch fiber, one for speed, the other endurance, and your water cell. And here's what happens to a lot of fighters. And this is part of not being in shape. And remember a few weeks ago, we were talking about the WBC, the WBA, and the IBF, and commissioners and stuff were meeting in California to discuss this very thing that would happen to this guy. You know, is that,
right?
You know, that's what those pre-weigh-ins weeks before about to see where a guy's at weight. You know, guys think if a guy loses a lot of weight and he comes down and then he goes drinks and eat and then he goes fight, he's going to weigh more, he's going to be stronger. That's always not necessarily true. And a lot of times with age factor, you can get away with a lot of things with guys when they're young. And youth comes into play. But when the guy's a little older and you're dealing with a lot of weight and you try to lose it all in one time, those things that are normally happen. And when you dehydrate trying to make a weight, what happens, it speeds up every organ in your body. You know what I mean? Because it goes in starvation mode, like you're starving.
Right.
So your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up. That's the protection that your body has for those things. And what happened with this guy, most likely, he probably was largely overweight. And he just said, one day, I'm just going to try to lose all this weight. Now, we know in training that a hard workout, a guy could lose in boxing up to 5-6 pounds in a long, gruesome, hot workout day. He can lose it with no problem as long as he go hydrate back up, recover, rest, and all that. But now when a guy goes and fasts his way down to a weight, that means he stops eating, he stops drinking, right, and he starts depleting his body of water by urinating. Some guys take things that make you everything come out of your stool. And when that happens, those things like that, when you deplete your body like that, all at one time, 10 pounds, 15 pounds, those are the things that happen. And not to say if he would have made it and didn't have to go to the hospital, if he goes and fight, what basically he just puts on really just a lot of water weight. And the water cell really don't get into your body when it's like that. Most of the time when it's the extreme case, to hydrate back up to get your energy cell like that, it takes at least 72 hours, you know, to get fully amped back up, you know. So, hey, man, guys that are doing it, man, doing it the right way. If he didn't hit the weight, he ain't in shape to fight.
Yeah.
You know? Right. He's not in shape to fight. Could you know? Here's what happens: guys of yesteryear that had to make weight the same day of the fight in the morning, go make weight, and later on that evening, go fight. This how it was. Guys were fighting 15-round fights, man.
Yeah.
So yeah. 15-round fights, Bob. You know. Yeah, but the science, when you apply it right, you can recover. You can go fight, win, and look good when you apply the science. If you're training hard, you make weight early in your training regimen, rebuild, come back down, go back up. be ready. Like I all the time say, at least in between 10 days, 7 days outside of fight, the fighter got to hit that weight. You know,
right.
In between 10 and 7 days. If he hits, when he hits that weight 10 days, at least 7 days outside of the fight target zone, when he hits that weight, he's ready. He'll go back up, he'll come back down. But when it comes weighing time, when he needs to hit that weight, it won't be no problem.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. Now, so here that you can get banned from trying to be in that weight class again for something like this. Is that, where does that stand? That you're not allowed to do that if you can't make it. I mean, I'm not sure how that works.
Well, in title fights, they had they had implemented a rule. Some of the world organizations that a fighter cannot lose in one day X amount of weight, or he can't put on X amount of weight in one day. You know what I mean?
Because
you had guys, man, doing that, sweating down, man, shoot, next day hop on the scale. This dude went from middleweight to light heavyweight, which is 15 pounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. But, hey, look, I want to say this, though. But to the young man's family and his friends and his loved ones, we send our prayers out to them, you know. It's a tough thing in sports, is that sometimes there's fatalities of people in the game. And it's always heart-wrenching when these kind of things happen. They don't happen a lot, but they do happen.
Right.
And that goes, that not only for boxing, when you're talking about fatalities of sports, boxing ain't even in the top 10. However, you know, you hear guys summer practice dropping out on the football field, having heart attacks and stuff like that on the field, on the baseball field, on the football field, on the basketball court. So it just ain't boxing. So we just want to get that out there.
Right. Okay, well, thank you for your insight on that, Aaron. Great. And I just wanted to also point out from that ESPN, that was the ESPN thing last Saturday night, the O'Connor thing, but it still got 534,000, kind of lower numbers than they wanted, but that was for the Kowalskis and Brave fight. So over 500,000 people still were watching that. Okay, let's see what else is going on around the world today in the World Boxing Review. Big fight tomorrow, we'll tell you about, of course, at the end. But for tonight, Saturday, the Lakefront Arena in New Orleans, Louisiana, USA, will feature the main event of Regis Prograis. He's 21-0, 18 KOs, going against Juan Jose Velasco, 20-0 with 12 knockouts. And that's for the interim WBC World Super Lightweight title. And also the battle for the vacant WBC Continental America's Lightweight title between Teofimo Lopez, he's 9-0, 7 KOs, against William Silva, 25-1, 14 knockouts. The Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco, California, will see Raquel Miller. She's 6-0, 3 KOs, taking on Tiffany Woodward, 4-10-3, in a female super welterweight headliner. Florentine Gardens out in Hollywood, California, features unbeaten super welterweight Jesse Martinez, 9-0, with 5 knockouts, versus Junior Calzada, 6-3-1. In Bellevue, Ontario, Canada, it's the heavyweight battle between the 13-3 with 12 knockouts, Dylan Carman and Keenan Hickman, who's 6-3-1. That's at the top of the card. And in Mexico City, Mexico, undefeated 20-year-old Eduardo Hernandez. He's been fighting since he was 16. He's 25-0, 22 wins by knockout. He defends his WBC Youth World Super Featherweight title against the challenger Marlon Cabrera. He's 24-2, 11 knockouts. And this is one of those kids we look for here on the World Boxing Review. 20-year-old, he's 25-0. Remember that name, folks. Eduardo Hernandez, the super flyweight. Offenburg, Germany will headline their night with Tyrone Zeus. He's 22-0-1, defending his WBA World Super Middleweight title against the 26-1, 14 knockouts, Rocky Fielding. Also on the card, it's Amiya Seki. She's 33-3-2, 5 KOs versus Cecilia Nemedi, 8-1 with 6 knockouts. Nemedi just lost the WBA title, a former WBA champion as well, for this fight tonight for the DBU Women's IBF, and Seki WBC Silver Female Bantamweight Belts. Jamal Alazia hosts the Cruiserweight Contest of Nicolas Gusunin, 7-1-1, taking on the 6-0 Amin Buseta. Baku, Azerbaijan will feature unbeaten middleweight Rufat Hajivev, 7-0, all 7 by KOs, and undefeated middleweight Izmat Guliyev. He's 9-0, all by knockout. Pristina Kosovo highlights the Cruiserweight clash of Tafik Bajrami, 13-1, 10 knockouts, versus Slavoljub Mitic, 8-7. Ekaterinburg, Russia, it's unbeaten Evgeny Chupakov, 19-0 versus Ernie Sanchez, 18-11-1, for the WBO Intercontinental Super Featherweight belt. Over in Drummond, Ireland, the main event is the battle for the vacant BUI Celtic Super Bantamweight title between Colin O'Donovan and Carl McDonald. Also on the card is the battle for the vacant BUI Celtic Super Lightweight title between Victor Rombel and Carl Kelly. In Essex, UK, it's Taylin Jones, 10-1, versus Darren Cordona, 7-2-1. That's for the Triple BFC Southern Area Middleweight Crown. And Leeds will feature the Saif Shima versus Jordan Granum Super Welterweight Contest. While at your call in London, the card is topped with the Super Welterweight clash between Konrad Stemkowski, 8-0, and Joshua Eshikovi, who's 11-0. And it will also feature our buddy Super Lightweight Christian Leight. He's in his 298th pro bout. He has a record of 12 wins, 277 losses, and 9 draws. He's taking on the debuting Simon Corcoran. And just another quick note, right before we came on the air, I did a quick note. And, you know, today the World Cup was a big World Cup final weekend, and we have the third-place game going on right now as we speak. And Belgium is leading England 1-0 at the halftime break there for the third-place game going on today. And, of course, tomorrow it's France versus Croatia. And I'm going to just jump out ahead a little bit here. And I'm taking Croatia tomorrow. So we'll see how I do. They're coming around it. I had them as a dark horse. They really do. They look like a nice dark horse team. And we'll see what happens. But they're just, we'll see what happens in the UK today if they come back and win that, because they really take their soccer seriously as well as their boxing, as we know.
Okay.
Maracena, yeah. Maracena, yeah. Spain highlights the super lightweight fight between Abdelmad Nekahat. He's 6-1-1, and Eligio Palacio, 7-30-5. Sardinia, Italy hosts a battle for the vacant Italy cruiserweight crown between Salvatore Ritu, 29-3, and Luca Dotenzo, who's 8-0. Accra, Ghana, the highlight will be the battle for the Ghanaian super bantamweight belt between Wasiru Muhammad, 7-0, all 7 by KOs, and Raymond Kami, 18-6, 10 knockouts. Hong Kong, China, will see Raymond Huang Kai-ching, 5-1, and Rio Narazuka, 8-7-1, vying for the vacant WBC Asian Boxing Council Continental Light Flyweight title. Pathum Thani, Thailand, will feature undefeated flyweight Lap Chong Chong, 7-0, while in St. John's, New Zealand, it's the battle for the New Zealand Professional Association female lightweight crown between Lanny Daniels and Nalini Helu at the top of the card. And finally on Sunday, tomorrow in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Lucas Martin Matisse, 39-4, 36-0, 36 KOs, defends his WBA world welterweight crown against the multi-time, we'll just say multi-time former champion Manny Pacquiao, whose record now stands at 59 wins, 7 losses, 2 draws, 38 KOs. And we've been looking forward to that one for a while. But also lots of good stuff on that undercard, too. Jack Tepler, he's 21-0, taking on Edivaldo Ortega, 26-1-1, for the interim WBA World Featherweight Crown. And Marutu Mathurin, he's 35-2, versus the 8-0 Muhammad Wasim for the vacant IBF World Flyweight Belt. And it's Carlos Canizales, 20 wins, 0 losses, 1 draw, defending his title against Bin Liu, and that's for the WBA World Light Flyweight title. So 4 title fights on that card tomorrow night in Malaysia. But lots of other good stuff going on around the world. There we go, 18 countries today, Aaron. We're rocking and rolling.
hey, look, well, 18 countries around the world. But, hey, look, Bob, without further ado, man, let's try to get our special guests on the line. We're going to try to call them and get them in here. Gene Kilroy, yeah. Hold on for a second. Let's see if we can get him on the line here. Gene. Yeah, Bob. You know, with Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but Gene Kilroy, yeah, he was he's from up around our area here, as we'll talk about it. But the Monroe City native. We're making a call out. See if we can get him on the line.
Kilroy.
Yeah.
Without further ado, welcome to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. You're on air with the radio aficionado Bob Murray, Gene Kilroy, the great, great businessman that I know with Muhammad Ali and a host of other great people, man. And look, I'm going to tell you a funny story. How many of your friends, and I know for absolute certain Gene Kilroy has been a friend of mine since I was a young man. How many people will introduce you to a billionaire with a house, a whole house underground, takes you underground where it can rain, snow, and do everything? Man, welcome to the show, Gene Kilroy.
Well, Aaron, I got a lot of respect for you. And the story of life is not what we achieve, it's what we conceive. And what I conceive about you is you were just a young little kid, came to the camp and became friends with Tim Witherspoon, Terrible Tim. You spend day and night with him. He was a young professional fighter when you got him at the time. Slim Robinson was the trainer, but you were the cook in the kitchen making the food. You made a great fighter out of him. You gave him a lot of good advice, the story of life, what you see, what to do, what to look for. And I got a lot of respect for you. And I can't understand the fact you worked with more champion fighters while you're not in the Conestoga Hall of Fame. I'm campaigning with you. You belong there. I see so many fighters. I call it sometimes the Hall of Shame, that they don't deserve to be there. I mean, people tell me, you know this one, you know that trainer, and I always reminisce with them, and I articulate about your ability and a good guy from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, and I'm very, very proud of you, all of your achievement, but you don't get the credit that you rightfully deserve. I was talking to Mike Tyson just 3 days ago, and I was telling him how you belong in Conestoga. And he said, he's a good guy. He said, I learned a lot from him. I had respect for him. And that's what it's about. When a fighter gets hit on the head and he's back in that corner, he wants to relate to someone that he can respect. He don't need someone to tell him, you're doing good now, just keep moving, you know. We're going to win this fight. The advice that you gave Mike Tyson and many fighters, not only about boxing, but about life. And I consider you to be a great, outstanding man. And I am very proud of all the things that you have achieved and received.
Yeah, man, Gene, let me tell you, you know, not everybody, you know, y'all took me under my wing, and I tell this story all the time. When I was young, you grabbed me one day in the training camp. You say, you come with me. You took me to New York City. And you told me, you said, one day you're going to be great at what you do. He said, but you got to look the part, speak the part, and do the part to be who you want to be. And you said, first of all, you got to learn how to dress. You took me to a tailor shop where you go and get you got your suits and stuff tailored. And you said, here's what you do. You got to be able to groom yourself. You're the one who taught me how to get French cuff shirts, the pocket squares, the ties, the wear your pants a certain way, the shoes. And everybody all the time asked me, how do you look so well? I said, well, Gene Kilroy is the one who taught me how to look well, look in a business type atmosphere to attract the people that you want. He told me you can't look like a hoodlum. You can't have a hoodlum dress to get up in the business world where people respect you and sit down at the plate and cut a deal with you. you told me you got to look the part. And then after that, you took me to Carnegie Deli in New York. We sat down. We had some – he said, yeah, you got to learn how to eat this here kind of food, Jewish food, you know. You got to eat this shit too. That's what you said. And then you said, I'm going to introduce you to somebody you're not going to forget. You took me down to the Kennedy's house, and you rang the doorbell. They opened the door. Oh, Gene, and da-da-da. Yeah, I want you to meet somebody. And you introduced me to them when I was a young man. And I appreciate that, Gene. You always introduce me to people that matter, people that you can call on when you need certain people, and you did that for me. And not only this, I tell you something. You mentioned Tim Witherspoon. Back then when he was sparring with Ali, he only had one professional fight. But Gene took us underneath his wing, and he said, look, man, you need a manager, and you need a damn car. And he said, that son of a gun's going to get you a car. And he goes, not only that, he's going to get you a hotel. You're going to stay in the condo. You're going to do this. He's going to do this for you. And this way you tell him. And that's exactly what happened.
But listen, this is something funny. I love talking. I hope we could go on for hours.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tim Witherspoon met a manager, some little guy in Philadelphia who flashed some money and all, and he bought him a car. So Tim is a naive kid, and he bought this car to camp. And it was smoking like heck. And I said, he got you a car to kill mosquitoes. It was smoking so much. And we all had a laugh, you know.
Yeah, everybody laughed.
Yeah, we had fun.
Yeah,
but getting back to dressing, you know, the clothes don't make the man. The man makes the clothes. You can see a guy coming down. And I seen all that around Ali with the frauds coming up there with their rented Cadillacs and their knockoff briefcases and the Louis Vuittons and all. And here they're trying to put a deal together for Muhammad Ali. They didn't even own a credit card.
Right.
I used to run them away, you know, and
yeah.
This is some of the stuff that I wanted to impress upon Aaron Snowell, who was a good guy. One time he said, Gene, can you get Muhammad to come to my house? I said, we're honored. And we didn't take everybody, but we took the key people. We went up, his mom cooked for us, and the whole neighborhood was talking about Ali coming up to the Snowell house. But I have great memories, and believe me when I tell you from the bottom of my heart, I am so proud of this man's achievement. Not only him, but his whole family. They're good people. The mother raised them right. They were a big credit to us in the training camp.
Hey, look, I never forget, you know, a lot of people say, well, where you learn? So I said, look, man, when you learn from the best, when Ali gives you a special training session with nobody in there in the training camp, used to be jam packed every day, but he gave us special training classes. Taught us, here's how you do wrap hands, move around, teach us how to box, all of that, you know. And that was something special. Not everybody got, you know. Ali did so much. It's just, you can't imagine the people that came to Schuylkill County at that training camp all over the world. But I'm going to tell you another funny story. You know, I know everybody in Gene Kilroy's family because Gene Kilroy introduced me to him and his mother. So the first time Gene Kilroy, he takes me to his house to meet his mother. He says, Mom, I want you to meet my son. Your son? She looks at me. She goes, he's a handsome guy, like that. Gene goes, no, I'm telling you, this is my son. She says, Gene, I'm telling you, he's handsome just like you, Gene. Jesus. He goes, no, Mom, this is like my son. He said, oh, oh, man, it was something from his brothers and all of them. We always had a tremendous time. And our friend, Lloyd Wells.
Oh, my
Lloyd,
God.
Lloyd Wells with...
the woman supplier.
Now, he, with the Kansas City Chiefs, he was with the Chiefs, right, Gene?
Yes, he was.
And let me tell you, you talking about somebody with personality and could come up with stuff. Eddie Mustafa's brother, they called him Rocky. And the only
we
reason,
can't talk about that, though.
The only reason because they call him Rocky because
no,
he
don't do that.
Big old rock up through his window. And after that, Lloyd was beside his room. He comes out of the room. He says, hey, Rocky!
We could go on for days and days, you know, and we were blessed to be around Ali. Ali
yes,
was, you know, everybody tells, there's nobody was closer to Muhammad Ali than Gene Kilroy, and Aaron knows that.
Yeah.
You know, I was the pallbearer for his mom and dad. I was in his wedding. I was with him when he was fighting and not fighting. And what made him a special guy, he always had time for the poor, the powerless, the oppressed, the deprived. And everybody said, what type of guy is he? Is he religious? Now, I just want to say something about his religion. He accepted the Nation of Islam, and it was a blessing for him. If he didn't do that, he might have been just another fighter. It gave him a whole new identity and a whole new goal. And I remember the Honorable Elijah Muhammad calling him on the phone and telling him, you're going to win this fight because Allah is on your side. Now, he called Allah his God. Some people call God Jesus, Moses, whatever you want to believe. But if a man believes in something and believes in it, and you see the Notre Dame football team, they go to Mass and Communion, and you see so many people cross the goal line, thank you, Jesus, thank you, Jesus. You know, but I believe that a God has too much to do than worry about sporting events. You know, there's wars, there are hurricanes, and what do you think? A God's going to punish the offense or defense of another team? But Ali believed in this, that he couldn't lose because Allah was on, and that was his booster rocket. And that's what I admired about him. And not only did he live the life of a good person and a God-fearing person, he acted it too. He lived it, he acted it, and he portrayed it. Am I right, Aaron?
Oh, no question about that. When I tell people all the time, you know, and not too many guys can practice what they preach, but Ali did, and, you know, he did it in grand style and grand fashion. But when you meet most people, you know, people want to mash you down and step on you. When
yep.
Ali was on top of the mountain, I don't think he never came off the mountain. He just went to higher mountains.
Yep.
And he didn't mind bringing you along with him.
You know, Aaron, when we look back over our lives, you know how we were blessed. Elijah Muhammad told me one time, there's a greater power has you with us than Muhammad and myself. Now, I'm a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm accepted by the Nation of Islam, who at that time were calling white people devils. And as Elijah Muhammad explained it to me, we don't call you a devil. Man judges man's action. Allah judges man's heart. We know your heart. I called the man the devil who castrated the black man, who killed the black man, hung the black man, raped the black man's wife and daughter. You must be a devil.
That's right.
You know, so I was blessed to be in that environment, and even to this day, I put the whole training camp together. Ali wanted logs. I found a guy could make a gym out of logs. Whatever he needed, I was there for him. And people today, their biggest thrill in life would be, say, they visit the Muhammad Ali training camp. They met everybody. And we had a thing up there. Everybody was nice to everyone.
Yeah, and that's right. And made everybody feel at home. Let me tell you what, Gene. As y'all made Ali great, y'all have put me and enshrined me right along with those other people. And I all the time say Muhammad Ali produced so many great people, not only in the field of boxing, but in the music industry, all of the musicians that used to be around. I mean, you name them, from Michael Jackson, Tom Jones, Isaac Hayes, Chris actors, Chris Christopherson, Stevie Wonder, Aaron, what's it called, Richard Pryor, man, you name them.
All the Kennedys were up there.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I mean, it was something. The Mike Douglas show was from there. I mean, we had fun up there, and all the people would come. And the biggest thing, we had a restaurant, a little kitchen that we used to have breakfast, and you never knew. He would invite everybody in.
Sister Lana, she wouldn't stop cooking because Ali wanted to feed everybody.
Yep.
He didn't care. He and that he would. And, Gene, I never forget times when Ali would sit there and listen to people's sad stories. They need this, their father didn't, and write checks after checks after checks.
Yep.
You
I would write the checks. He would sign them.
Just time after time after time after
but
time.
But just think, Darren. You know, we got to give Larry Holmes a lot of credit. He was the great heavyweight. Would you agree?
He was.
Now,
without question.
But listen, when I brought him to the training camp, you know, what would he have been if he didn't arrive in Deer Lake?
Yeah, with clothes in a fruit with the crate that you put fruit in.
Yep.
When he came up there, but
you
know, hey, it shows you. You know, look at all of them. Look at all the heavyweight champions: Tim Witherspoon, Tony Tubbs, Leo Randolph, Michael
Eddie Mustafa. You know,
Eddie Mustafa, Saad Muhammad.
Yeah.
Oh man, there's so many to go back over that time period.
That was really the true title of that camp is the champions.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, Gene. And everything, you know, like I all the time say, when Ali said, look, and told us, look, you can be whatever you want to be. I said, what? He said, yeah, you can be whatever you want to be. Hey, up here. You believe in God, you can be whatever you want to be.
Well, you know, Aaron, when you're a young guy, you got to realize one thing. Between good and greatness, you know, you could have a great player and a good player. It's pride.
That's right.
Pride doesn't let the great ones fail. And
that's
Ali
right.
had so much pride. We're talking one time, and he said, I never realized when I lose, little boys cry.
That's right.
When someone else will lose, no one even cares.
Yeah.
So he said, I gotta do my best. And I mean... The best time in my time was there when his mom and dad was cooking and he'd come in early. We'd wake up, do the road work, then we'd go.
Right.
And, you know, I started him watching his opponents that he was fighting. We'd go in at breakfast. He'd watch who he was fighting and then he'd go to sleep. I would hang all day there, making sure no one bothered him. The phone calls coming in, the beggars. The never Willoughbys. Then he gets up at 1 o'clock, wake him up at 1 to go over to spar. And you know, it was a long day, but it was worth it. The greatest time of my life was spending it with Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, and them long runs that you know you used to take. A lot of those pictures, Gene. That long white fence up there in Deer Lake around that property where he used to run, where you used to take him running. And run behind him. So a lot of those pictures are your pictures, and I know you got a lot of.
And I never sold a picture, Aaron. I've never sold a picture.
And you got some great ones. I mean, some great photos. A lot of people are with that man. But hey, look, Gene, I want
you know,
to
Aaron. Somebody told me the other day, Jim Brown. I had breakfast with Jim Brown, who I definitely admire and love and respect. He said, you know, Gene, you should write a book. I said, they should pay me not to write the book.
That's right, because you can't tell everything. But, hey, but Gene, I know we have a boxing historian, Tony Trim, hanging in the queue because he's going to do something on Mike Tyson, the history part. Tony, if you just hold on. We have something special Bob has prepared that happened. How long was it ago, Bob?
Yeah, hey. Well, first of all, yeah, hey, Gene, hi. Bob Murray back here with you. It's nice to talk to you again after a while. But, yeah, I wanted to cue up something from way back. Once upon a time back in October of 2006, we premiered a show on the WPAM radio in Pottsville, 1450. And it was the World Boxing Hour. And you mm-hmm. were one of the first guests, along with Boom Boom Mancini and Tommy Hearns. And let's just see if we can get this to play right now. It's a little prediction you made a long time ago.
The story of life, it's not the destination, it's the journey. And when we all have a good journey, and, you know, bringing Muhammad to Deer Lake, a lot of people, you know, many of the people were good to us. The Bedway, Mrs. Bedway, John Kramer, the Pollocks, Fluji D. Casimiro in Mahoney City, and Glenn Miller, who was the guy that built the camp. But I have a lot of pleasant memories. And don't sell yourself short, Aaron. You know, I kind of study your record, and I keep in touch with all the people in boxing. You are a future Hall of Famer. It's just a matter of time where you'll be recognized with the Boxing Hall of Fame, and you'll be a welcome there and a member of that. You have a great boxing record. You had more champions than any trainer alive. And
well, that's the question.
There you go.
Yeah, Gene, and you predicted
12 years ago you picked it out, Gene. 12 years it took, but we finally got him in the Hall of Fame here.
And
well,
Tony,
it's not only the Hall of Fame there. I mean, he should
Tony
be in the
Trim,
big one, too. You know, we know.
Trim on the National Boxing Hall of Fame, Tony and Shelley Williams, they bring my name to the National Boxing Hall of Fame.
Well, I do it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I get around people, and Tony Curtis, I learned from him. He used the term about never will it be. I mean, I hear people, and they say this, and they say that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Aaron Snowell, Gene Kilroy, Jim Witherspoon, Ali, we lived the gladiator life.
That's
you know,
right.
We were blessed. We were. My mother, you know. Someone asked me, do you have any fear? I said, the only fear I have is that my mom's going to wake me up and say, come on, you got to go to school like my life's been a dream. You know, from a humble family and a good family and the people I met. And, you know, if you don't like an Aaron Snowell or a Gene Kilroy, you don't like them because they're bad people. You don't like them because you're jealous of them.
Yeah. Wait, Gene, I appreciate that. And look, Tony, are you online?
I am.
Yeah.
You know, Tony,
yes.
We came from a great area in Pennsylvania. Now, listen, Rocky Aoki, they were just opening gambling in Atlantic City, and they wanted to put he bought a hotel. He wanted us to train in Atlantic City, and he'd give us all the rooms free, all the food free, to set up the ring and all. But it wouldn't be conducive for all either Atlantic City. You know what I'm talking about, Aaron.
Yeah, that's
we were
right.
That mob with the beggars and the hustlers and the users.
That's
so,
right.
Bernard Pollock he owned this land up there. He wanted to sell us and all. And I said, you know, it wouldn't be a bad way. So we went up to see it. And we bought the land and then. And it was, you know, it was just far enough from New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C., you know, for people to come up and enjoy it, you know. But if it would have been in Atlantic City, they would have took his blood, Ali's blood, and sold it. Would you agree, Aaron?
Oh, no question. He wouldn't have been the same man in them big fights with George Foreman and Joe Frazier, and he wouldn't have been the same man. He would have got worse.
Now, Aaron, here's what people don't realize. When he was training in Miami, they plucked everything off him. You know, all the feathers off him. He was the naked chicken.
I taught him
how to be a businessman. The camp was a write-off. Everything we did was a write-off. Just like the National Football League. Their training camps is a write-off. Their salaries, the people they pay the salaries to is a write-off. So that's what we did. When I first came around, Ollie, he didn't even know about writing checks.
You didn't have no money. How could you write checks?
Yeah.
When he came to Schuylkill County, he wasn't doing very well. That's what the people in Schuylkill County inspired him from people that just going around in the little towns, Monoy City, Hazleton, Schuylkill Haven.
Yeah,
everybody,
it's about respect. Everybody respected him. But that training camp, he became a businessman. You know, all the promoters who conned him and took advantage of him. You know, it's unbelievable. And I take a lot of pride. I can meet my maker someday, and he can say, what have you done? Well, I took a man and helped make him the greatest. Ollie, I have a picture Leroy Neiman did, and Ollie wrote on it, "Thank you, Gene, for helping making me the greatest." I mean, I'm blessed. I believe I'm blessed.
And we're going to end it there, Gene. We're going to bring you back in a couple weeks, and so we can finish off. But, Gene, we'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show to be a guest here. You know, we got to let Tony do Mike Tyson real quick with this part two. But thank you for coming on the show,
bro. Listen, Tony, it was nice hooking you up, and good luck to you. And keep the people informed of the truth.
Okay. I will do that, Gene. And thank you, man, Gene. You know how I feel about you, Gene. I love you.
But you forgot when I said, "This is my son." I told my mom, but he looks more like mom, like his mother.
I don't call you son. Here's what you used to say. I don't call you son because you're mine. I call you son because you shine, Gene. That's what you used to
say.
Take care. Thank you, sir. Thank you. God bless you too, bro. Yeah, thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me that. Trainer of Champions, and also right now we have Bob Murray, the radio aficionado, but our boxing historian Tony Trim, who's doing a piece on Mike Tyson. Welcome back to the show, Tony.
Thank you, Aaron. It was great listening to Gina. I've met him several times here in Vegas. He's a character. He's quite a guy.
Yeah, Gene's my man. Gene is
a
character.
He's a good man.
He's a good man. He tells it the way it is now. Gene tells it the way
it is.
He don't hold nothing back.
And why should you? Why should you? You know, that's the only way to be, you know. He's a great guy, you know. He doesn't remember me or know me, but I remember him well. But anyway, we got to do the second part on Tyson here. And so Tyson had a professional record of 58 fights. With 50 wins, 44 of those wins came by way of knockout with 6 losses, and he had 2 no contest. At the peak of his career, Tyson was worth $300 million, but as of 2017, after bouts of lavish spending and filing for bankruptcy in 2003, Tyson is reportedly worth about $3 million. Tyson raised from childhood delinquency to boxing camp put him in the center of the media's attention. Met with sudden fame, Tyson's team began partying hard and spending and stepping out with various Hollywood stars. In the 80s, Tyson set his sights on television actress Robin Gibbons. The couple began dating, and on February 7th, 1988, he and Gibbons married in New York. But Tyson's game seemed to be on the decline, and after several close calls in the ring, It became clear that the boxer's edge was slipping. Once known for his complete offensive and defensive moves, Tyson seemed to completely rely on his one-punch knockout move to finish his bout. The boxer blamed his longtime trainer Rooney for his struggles in the ring and fired him in the mid-1988. After his game was falling apart, so was Tyson's marriage to Gibbons. Allegations of spousal abuse began to surface in the media in June of 1988, and Gibbons and her mother demanded access to Tyson's money for a down payment on a $3 million home in New Jersey. That same year, police were called to Tyson's home after he began throwing furniture out the window and forced Gibbons and her mother to leave the home. That summer, Tyson also found himself in court with the manager, Bill Caton, in an effort to break his contract. By July of 1988, Caton had settled out of court, agreeing to reduce his share from one-third to 20% of Tyson's purses. Soon after, Tyson struck up a partnership with boxing promoter Don Keene. The move seemed like a step in the right direction for the boxer, but his life was spinning out of control, both in and out of the ring. Tyson's behavior during this time became increasingly violent and erratic. In August 1988, he broke a bone in his right hand after a 4 a.m. street brawl with professional fighter Mitch Green. The next month, Tyson was knocked unconscious after driving his BMW into a tree at D'Amato's home. Tabloids later claimed the accident was a suicide attempt brought on from exclusive drug use. He was fined $200 and sentenced to community service for speeding.
Okay.
Later that September, Gibbons and Tyson appeared in an interview with Barbara Walters in which Gibbons described her marriage as pure hell. Shortly thereafter, she announced that she was filing for divorce. Tyson countersued for a divorce and an argument began an ugly months later court process. This was just the beginning of Tyson's struggles with women. In late 1988, Tyson was sued for his inappropriate attention toward two nightclub patrons, Sandra Miller and Loris Davis. The women sued Tyson for allegedly forcefully grabbing them and insulting them while out dancing. On February 14, 1988, Tyson's split with Gibbons became official. Tyson landed in court yet again, this time in 1998 as a plaintiff. On March 5, 1998, the boxer filed a $100 million lawsuit in U.S. District Court in New York against Don Keene, accusing the promoter of cheating him out of millions of dollars. He also filed a lawsuit against his former manager, Rory Holloway and John Horn, claiming they made Keene Tyson's exclusive promoter without the boxer's knowledge. Keene and Tyson settled out of court for $14 million. Tyson allegedly lost millions in the process.
We got 90 seconds, Tony.
Well, you know, this Tyson thing could go on probably for another month. There's so much on him, Aaron. Tyson could have been one of the greatest fighters of all time if he wasn't stupid. And unfortunately, you know, you can't protect one from oneself. And if he'd have done things better or maybe if Chris hadn't died, things would have been better for him, and he'd have been a better person. So, God bless him and hope things turn around for him.
Well, I'm going to tell you like John L. Sullivan, trainer, said about John L. Sullivan when he lost his first fight. He said John L. Sullivan was a great fighter, and he said at one time, one night, is that the women, the booze, the partying, and his lifestyle caught up all with him one night. And to say that about John L. Sullivan in the history of boxing, that's what happened to Mike Tyson. It all caught up with him one night. And it looks like he's trying to get his life back together, and I hope he does as well as you do. We have 10 seconds, and we wish the former undisputed champ of the world the very, very best, Tony. But thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show. I know we went around a little bit over with Gene Kilroy, but we'll try to get back to that, Tony. And our radio aficionado, Bob, as always, thank you for bringing us 18 countries. And Tony Trim, our boxing historian, great job with Mike Tyson. That's a hard subject matter, Tony, and you did a great job. You handled it grand style and fashion. Thank you for tuning in for the World Boxing Review radio show. See you next week.
Thank you. Talk to you all next week. Yep. Bye.